One of the finest examples of that comes from the Temple of Athena at the, again, a small town on the shores of western Turkey today at Priene, probably put up in the 4th century BC, a rebuilding from an earlier temple. The city actually relocated itself in the late classical age. And the Ionic order of construction becomes an order of construction adapted by many of the Anatolian peoples, notably the Carians, and the sanctuary at Lebranda, which would be to the southeast of Miletus, the leading Ionian city. We'll talk about it more when we're dealing with the Hellenization of Asia Minor in the era of Alexander the Great. But when they opted to start building in Greek-style architecture, they went with the Ionic, not the Doric or the later Corinthian style. This is also true in that little district of Lycia, where the Ionic order is embraced and used not only for temples, but often for these funerary monuments. I mentioned the funerary monument at Xanthus. You will find in Lycian cities and cities all along the shores of Asia Minor that many prominent families, starting in the Archaic period, but running right through the Roman Empire, put up these marvelous mini temples. And when you look at them, you think they're a temple, but they're really a funerary monument to a family where apparently rites were administered. And it's an adapting of the Greek architectural religious order to private use by Anatolians, by native peoples of Asia Minor, and gives an indication of the interchange going on between the East Greeks and their kinsmen and neighbors in Asia Minor. I suspect that what went on at these shrines were in the equivalent of an ancestor worship. And a scholar in classic China would understand immediately what these tombs meant. Furthermore, many of them are actually built within the city limits at times, quite different from Greek burial practices where you kept the dead outside of the city because of fears of pollution. The East Greeks were also in the forefront of developing a freestanding sculpture, and I mentioned that all too briefly. This notion of sculpture that is life-size or slightly larger than life-size humans, men and women both, came from Egypt, where there was a long tradition of using sculptural decoration on funerary monuments. And here again, the Greeks who arrived in Egypt, especially Milesians and Samians, who arrived as merchants, mercenaries, and settlers in the Greek commercial colony at Naukratas, there they took over the notion of sculpture, but again wrenched it out of its context from Egypt. They made the figures freestanding. There are several instances where they've been reconstructed, particularly today at the sanctuary of Hera at Samos, where a family group in reproduction, the originals are in the museum, but a reproduction of them are set up as they would have looked on the sacred walkway leading between the city and the sanctuary to Hera. And these were apparently commissioned by leading families. We're not sure if the male figures, the choroi, represented some form of Apollo or the individual. The choroi, the female figures, who the male figures are always heroic nudes, the female figures are always clothed. The female figures are really some of the most exquisite renditions of the female form. A number of them are survived from Athens. They were there at the time of the Persian attack in 480 BC, but many of those on the Acropolis were really East Greek workmanship or Athenians who were trained in the East Greek style, and they date between about 525 and, say, 490 BC, and they're on magnificent display in the Athens Acropolis Museum, and they really are breathtaking. They're really some of the most charming renditions of the human form. And one aspect about archaic civilization in the Greek world is you see in sculpture, you see even in the vase painting, from what fragments of paintings have now been discovered in Turkey, that they're on the edge of the breakthroughs that we associate with classical art. The idealized, naturalized forms, the concentration on the human as the central focus of art, all of that we associate with the classical traditions of the 5th century BC. They're there. They're on the edge of it at the time that the Persian wars erupt. And in some ways, at least to me, it's more satisfying to look at that point where you're not quite sure what direction the art forms are going to be. There's a certain simplicity, there's a certain, archaic feature, hence the name of the age, and it's not yet the developed conclusion of the artistic tradition. They're still experimenting. And I think that's one of the delights and attractions of studying the visual arts of the early Greek world, and particularly the East Greek arts that were produced in Ionia. As I mentioned, the Ionians are in the forefront of many of these developments. That situation will change, and in the next lecture we'll explain why.